with the virus and also with other issues because of the poverty in that country. With our help, Richard was able to organize a giveaway for the church at Pelton where he works. They were able to give each family in the church a 25-kilogram bag of rice, 2 packs of pasta, and 2 cans of sardines. I want you to think about that in relation to what a normal Walmart pickup would look like for us. We are really blessed here in America. They had enough to serve 82 families there at Pelton. And I know some of you gave toward this effort, and Richard, he wanted to express his thanks to all of us that we were able to help them. The struggle continues there in Haiti as we continue to struggle as well with the virus. But just the poverty in that country, really have to see it to understand what it's like to be there day in and day out. But thank you for everyone who helped with this effort. I know the families there were appreciative and also helped greatly by what we were able to do. Over the next few weeks, we're going to examine the tough stuff of being misunderstood. And there's a premise that I want you to try and remember as we go through these lessons over the next few weeks. We need grace in our relationships. I think all of us know that. We need to have a forgiving spirit. We need to be patient with each other. We need to be loving in our relationships. This certainly applies to our marriages. It applies to our relationships with our children. It applies to our relationships here as the body of Christ. We also need grace in our society. I think all of us understand how important that is right now. So this is the premise I want to bring before you that I hope you'll remember over the next few weeks. In our relationships, whether we're talking about marriages, with our children, with people out in this community, this world, I ask you to not set out to be offensive. I think there's people that do that. I know there are people who do that. We see it here in our world today, people who are determined to offend people. So we have that side of it. We should not set out to be that type of person, to offend people by what we say, by what we do, by how we act. But there's also another side to this that I think is just as important. Don't look to be offended. There are a lot of people today that are just looking for people to misspeak. I can't tell you how difficult it's been just being a preacher. Because, you know, there are people that are probably listening, maybe on live stream or perhaps even live in an audience, that are just looking for you to say something that they would disagree with. Now, if you take this premise and apply it to any relationship, you can see where relationships can just go off the rails. Imagine what a marriage would look like if the husband and wife set out to be offensive. They were trying to offend each other, and that happens. And then you also had the other part of it going on as well, where the husband and wife were easily offended, and they looked to be offended. They were looking for something to be done so that they could cry foul. Can you even imagine how difficult of a relationship that would be? You have one person always trying to offend, purposefully setting out to make others feel bad. And then you have the other person that's just trying to grab something that they consider offensive. Can you imagine what that would look like? Any relationship that has these dynamics, it's not going to last. It's not going to work. Whether it's a marriage, whether it's with our children, whether it's in a job setting, or just out in the world in general. And I think we have seen the results of this on a big scale in our society. There are people who are trying to offend. And there are also people who are looking to be offended. Ralph Waldo Emerson, he said this, "To be great is to be misunderstood." These words describe all of us at certain points in our lives. Now, if you're like me, as you read this quote, you may be thinking, if this is true, then I'm a lot greater than I thought, because I feel like I'm misunderstood a lot. Few things in life are harder to endure than being misunderstood, because what happens is it leads to a multitude of other things that can really impede relationships. And to make matters worse, being misunderstood is such a common human experience. It's something we all relate to, something we've all been through. We can be cruising along through life. Everything seems to be going great. Maybe it's in our marriage. Maybe it's with our kids. Maybe it's at work. And then suddenly we collide head on with someone who misunderstands our actions or misjudges our motives. And as a result, we can spend months, sometimes years, expending precious energy trying to climb out of the wreckage. And there are some relationships that just perpetually stay in this state. The thought of surviving this part of life kind of reminds me of hockey. I'm a sports guy and I always think about different sports. And one of the questions I've thought about, and I've even asked other people, what do you consider the most difficult sport to play? And I always take golf and I just set it aside, because it's easy to play golf. I can go out and play it right now, but it's increasingly difficult. But from an athletic standpoint, what it takes athletically, my answer has always been the same. It's always hockey. Can you imagine being a great hockey player, the work that it took to get there? Because you have all of these collisions that are going on, and they're taking place while you're on ice skates. The hockey players, they love contact. Two teams of six players on ice skates, they try to make a goal by smashing a 3-inch rubber puck into the opponent's net. Now, that's actually the easy part. What it turns out to be, though, is a nonstop game of sanctioned collisions for high-caliber athletes who love slamming into one another. And did I mention all of this is happening on ice skates? It's a difficult sport. In my mind, it is the most intense sport. It's the one that takes the most athletic ability. When it comes to life, being misunderstood is not a game. In life, just like hockey, it can get extremely ugly. The gloves fly off. Emotions boil over. And the result is a blur of chaos and pain. Misunderstandings often put us at odds with the people we care about most in life. Marriages suffer. Friendships end. Life, it gets hard as a result of being misunderstood. And surviving these misunderstandings can be a long and grueling ordeal. And I want you to remember this. And this is what we're going to look at here today and then again in 2 weeks. We're not alone. This is not something that only us are going through. The Bible is about real people living life. And if we struggle with certain aspects of life, we can be confident that people from the past struggled in similar ways. And God shares this truth with us in His Word. And I want us to look at the lives of two people here this morning who know what it's like to be misunderstood. We're going to start with Joseph. Life at times was very difficult for Joseph. He was abandoned by his brothers. He was thrown into a pit and sold into slavery. You know, at least we could say they didn't kill him, right? These were trying times for this young man. Everything that Joseph knew in his life, it was just thrown upside down. How did he end up here? How did Joseph end up in this pit with his brothers looking down at him with contempt? I would suggest that Joseph's brothers had misunderstood Joseph's special treatment by their father. They certainly misunderstood Joseph's dreams and his interpretations of those dreams. And after a few hurtful experiences, your life actually turned a corner for Joseph. He had been rejected by his family, rejected by his brothers. He was sold into slavery. They didn't even want him around. What are you going to sell him? I wonder how much they got for Joseph. Here, let's just sell him. When the dust settles, he finds himself in the house of Potiphar, a pretty good landing spot. Potiphar was a high-ranking official in Egypt. And God, he describes to us the dramatic turn of events that took place in the life of Joseph with these words. This is after Joseph had been sold by his brothers. This is after he ends up in the house of Potiphar. The Lord was with Joseph. Now, I wonder if Joseph was thinking that when he was in that pit, when his brothers were up above him having an argument, are we going to kill him or are we going to let him live? I wonder if Joseph was thinking to himself, the Lord is with me right now. But he was, and he became a successful man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian, Potiphar. Now his master saw that the Lord was with him and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. Potiphar, pretty intelligent guy, he sees that everything that Joseph does, it's like it turns to gold. Everything that Joseph is involved with, it prospers. It's a benefit. And so what does Potiphar do? Well, he does what any smart man will do. He just starts giving more and more control to Joseph. If everything he does works, if everything that he does turns to gold, let's just give him the keys to everything. And that's pretty much what Potiphar does. This didn't happen by accident. It happened because the Lord was with Joseph. So Joseph, he found favor in his sight, and he became his personal servant. As far as this house, Joseph, he rose to the highest position that you could possibly rise to in this house. He was Potiphar's personal assistant. So we look at Joseph's life. Everything's going great. He's adored by his father, but his brothers hate him. And so he's sold into slavery. So we go from this high to this extreme low. He's sold to people that he doesn't even know. But then he ends up in a good place and the Lord is with him. So he rises back up as high as he could possibly get in this house. And everything that Potiphar owned, all that he owned, he put in Joseph's charge. And it came about that from the time he made him overseer in his house and over all that he owned, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house on account of Joseph. Thus, the Lord's blessing was upon all that he owned in the house and in the field. So he left everything. Now, it kind of becomes clear what Potiphar does. He leaves all that he has. He leaves everything to Joseph. And with him there, he did not concern himself with anything except the food which he ate. And to top all of it off, we get this next part. Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. Everything seems to be going good for Joseph right now. You read Genesis 39, 2 through 6. What a turnabout. What a drastic change. From being sold into slavery, from being here in this pit, wondering if you're ever going to live, to rise up to this point. He's a successful young man. He's also handsome. But this is where life takes another sudden swing at Joseph. You know, he truly did live a roller coaster life. The dramatic twists are the results of misunderstandings. Potiphar's wife, she wanted Joseph for herself. You know, we know the story. We know what happens. Many times Joseph rejected her seductive advancements. She refused to give up. Joseph refused to give in. If you look at Genesis 39, verse 7, here is a picture of what spiritual warfare looks like. If you want to know what it looks like to just kind of look in on a temptation, to see what it's like when an individual is just being bombarded by Satan, this is it. It came about after these events. Now, those events were everything that we just read. Everything that Joseph was doing was working. Potiphar put him in control of all of his house. And then this happens. Spiritual warfare came about after these events that his master's wife looked with desire at Joseph. And she said, "Lie with me." Satan won't give up trying to convince us to give in. That's his mission. He won't give up. It doesn't matter how many times we reject. It doesn't matter how many times we say no. There will always be another temptation around the corner. It might be the same temptation we're struggling with, packaged up a little differently. But Satan isn't going to give up. But the question becomes, are we going to give in? Potiphar's wife, she was persistent. That's the nature of Satan's work. If you were going to describe our enemy, there's a lot of different ways you could describe him. I think one word that we need to know, he's persistent. He doesn't give up. That means we better be ready. We better be prepared. Because temptation's coming. Right now, you may be like Joseph. There's probably not a lot of people right now that think life's great because of everything that we're going through. But even as we look at our families, maybe we're able to see a family's healthy. I'm able to provide for them the basic needs of life. I'm able to provide by the grace of God. So we're thinking, you know, everything's pretty good. Be prepared. Satan's coming after you. You know, Joseph, he didn't give in. And we get some insight into why Joseph stood strong. In Genesis 39, 8 and 9, Joseph talks about his relationship with Potiphar. That Potiphar had placed so much responsibility on him, he did not want to go against that trust. But Joseph's resolve, it actually ascended even higher than Potiphar. Now, within this house, Potiphar was king. Now, Potiphar wasn't Pharaoh, but over this particular house, his house, that's how Potiphar lived. He was in control. And he had placed so much responsibility on Joseph. And Joseph did not want to go against that trust. But when you look at what Joseph says, when you look inside his mind, there was actually a bigger reason why Joseph didn't give in. Verse 8, we learn about Potiphar and everything that he's done. Beginning of verse 9, there is no one greater in this house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me except you. Those words take me back to the garden. I think about Adam and Eve. You know, God just had one responsibility for them. And Joseph looks at the scene and he looks at everything that Potiphar's given to him. And he says, everything has been given to me by your husband, by my master. Everything has been laid at my feet except for you. How could I take that? But then you keep reading and you get to the crux of the matter. Because Joseph, he then says this, how then could I do this great evil and sin against God? Joseph didn't give in because of his respect for God. And Joseph realized why he was blessed. Joseph understood that through all of this, the Lord had been with him. Now, I just showed you what spiritual warfare looks like. This is it. Whatever temptation you're facing, just insert it right here. Satan trying to get you to give in. If you want to stand strong, and as a parent who has a daughter that's just about to go to college, when I think about what she's going to face, I understand that for her to stay strong, it's going to have to be because she has respect for God. I know she has respect for me and for her mom, but it's got to go higher than that. It's got to go above that. If she's going to stay faithful to Christ, if she's going to stay faithful to God, it's going to be because she loves God, because she respects God. And for us, if we're going to resist temptation day in and day out, if we're going to stand strong, we have to have respect for God, even when life gets hard, even when it gets tough. You know, one day, Joseph was actually forced to run away from her advancements. That's what we see in these verses. Sometimes that's what we have to do. Sometimes we just need to run from temptation. It happened one day that he went into the house to do his work. Joseph, he's just doing what he's supposed to do. And none of the men of the household was there inside. And here she comes again, striking against him again, saying, "Lie with me." And he left his garment in her hand and fled. He ran and he went outside. Potiphar's wife told a lie about what actually happened, and she accused Joseph of wrongdoing. Joseph did nothing wrong, yet he still stood accused. And it was Potiphar's wife, it was her word against Joseph's word. Joseph did nothing wrong, but he's being accused by a powerful, vengeful woman. Now, what do you think happened? Who do you think Potiphar is going to believe? Well, let's look. Now, when his master heard the words of his wife, basically his wife is accusing Joseph of trying to rape her. When the master hears these words, he is angry. He is furious. His anger burned inside him. And notice how he refers to Joseph. "This is what your slave did to me." So Joseph's master took him and put him into the jail, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in the jail. If you try to think about life for Joseph, you know, here are two big events in his life where he's probably thinking, "All right, this is it. It's been nice to know all of you. I think I'm done." He thinks he's going to die when his brothers are debating whether or not they're going to kill him. They instead sell him into slavery. And now he's probably thinking once again, "All right, it's over. I'm going to die right here. And I did nothing wrong." You know, her baseless rant landed Joseph in an Egyptian dungeon. I don't know exactly what it looked like, but I promise you it wasn't good. And here he spent years in virtual obscurity. He had been thrown into a pit. Now he was thrown into a dungeon. Anybody want to trade places with Joseph? And all of this happened to one person who seemed to be doing everything right. This is Joseph's life. He had been unjustly accused by his brothers, and now he was unjustly accused by Potiphar's wife. I think the word we could use to describe this is misunderstood. He was misunderstood by his brothers. "All right, Joseph, get in the pit." And he was misunderstood by Potiphar, and he was thrown into prison. I think I'd rather take my chances with hockey. You know, Joseph certainly isn't alone in being misunderstood. Every human faces this struggle. So if this is true, then Jesus would also face this. After all, he took on flesh and blood. He took on humanity just like you and I, so that he could sympathize with all of our weaknesses, all of our frailties. And this area of his life is no different. In fact, everything in his existence here on earth, from womb to tomb, was wrapped in a tangled web of misunderstanding. His undeserved pain and suffering didn't simply feel like it lasted a lifetime. It did. Have you ever been misunderstood? Let me introduce you to somebody who understands. I would dare say Jesus is the most misunderstood person who has ever lived. He is still misunderstood today. Sometimes I wonder if we even really know who he is, if we really understand what his life is about. After all, even the apostles, these men who traveled with him for 3 years, his closest friends, his closest relationships in life, and they misunderstood him. They misunderstood his purpose. They misunderstood his life. They misunderstood his mission. They misunderstood what he was about. Just look at his life. Jesus continually had to wrestle with being misunderstood. Critics joked about the circumstances of his birth. The religious pundits disputed his divine origin with vicious taunts, even to the point of accusing him of belonging to Satan. Now think about what Jesus went through. This is just one episode when the religious leaders, they look at what Jesus is doing, they listen to him teach, they see the miracles that he's able to perform, and they say he's doing the work of Satan. Misunderstood him. They didn't know who he was, what he was about. They scorned his purposes. They reviled his teachings. They were suspicious of his motives, critical of his methods, and angered by his message. Ultimately, the Jewish leaders, they conspired with the Roman officials to put him to death. He stands before Pilate, and Pilate, he doesn't get him. He doesn't understand what he's about. And this explains what the Apostle John meant when he wrote these words in John 1. I want to read John 1, 5 through 11 to you again. And I want you to listen to the Apostle as he describes to us the life of Jesus. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness, to bear witness about the light, that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but came to bear witness about the light. The true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. Have you ever wondered why God sent John the Baptizer to prepare the way for Jesus? Even with everything that John the Baptizer did, and he did what he was supposed to do, he fulfilled his purpose, he paved the way for Christ. Even with everything John the Baptizer did, people still didn't get it. They still didn't understand who this man was, what he was about, what he was trying to do. And from the beginning of John's gospel account, he's describing this overriding dynamic in the life of Jesus. Now, for us in our relationships, for us as we move through life, if we just get into one misunderstanding, maybe somebody misjudges what we say, maybe somebody misunderstands our motives, and we see the fallout from it, we feel it, a relationship that's now in turmoil, a relationship that just seems to be falling apart right at our feet. We felt that pain. We felt that hurt. Guys, this was Jesus's life. This was his existence. As John is trying to describe Jesus to us and what he's going to face, what he's going to go through from the very beginning of his gospel account, he describes for us somebody who's misunderstood. Look at verse 5. It's here on the screen. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. Ever feel that way today? That you're trying to do good. You're trying to do right. You're trying to be a part of the solution for what our country is facing. And people just don't understand. They don't understand our motives. They don't understand our purpose. Just don't comprehend it. And the hatefulness just seems to continue to spread. I want you to notice verse 10. It's not here on the screen. But if there's a verse within this text that just stands out, it's this. Jesus was in the world. He left heaven. He came down here to earth. He was here just like you and I are right now. He was in the world, and the world was made through him. Wow, what a statement. Jesus came down to his creation. Now it had been corrupted because of sin, but everything that Jesus created alongside God, he's now right here living in it. I took care of that tree. I made that river. I made that canyon. I made those mountains. I created that bird. Imagine what it was like for Jesus. He created all of this. Now he is living in it. And then you get this final statement in verse 10. Yet the world did not know him. They didn't know him. They didn't know what he was about. They didn't know why he came. They didn't know what he was trying to do. Even his own, He came to his own. He came to Jewish people. And those were his own. They didn't even receive him. Jesus came into an uncomprehending darkness where he met nothing but unbending misunderstanding. Now, before we dig further into Jesus' life, I want you to do some thinking. It's been a while since we've been in school. For some of us, it's been a long while. Even for our kids, it's been several months. So I have a little homework for you. I want you to think about some times when you've been misunderstood. And I also want you to try to identify some times when Jesus was misunderstood in his life. Some of them I've already brought to your attention today. There's a series of questions I want you to think about. Identify two different groups of people who misunderstood Jesus. From all of his interactions, I want you to try to get down to some specifics. Identify two groups that really didn't get Jesus, that didn't understand what he was about. And then I want you to list the scriptures where Jesus experienced this. It's all for us in the Gospels. You don't have to read very far to where you get to some real life examples where Jesus went through this. Now, again, don't forget about how painful it is for us when we are misunderstood in life. I want you to see the magnitude of what Jesus faced in this area. So just list the scriptures where Jesus faced this. And then what are some ways, even still today, that Jesus is misunderstood? Maybe this is where you get into your own mind. You look inside your own heart. Do I really understand who Jesus is? Do I really know what he's about? Consider the word disciple. Do we really know what it's like, what it takes to be a follower of Jesus? And then the final question, what are some practical steps that we can take to survive being misunderstood in our own lives? There's four questions. If you just answer three, you get a 75 at best. If you just do two, you're failing. So four questions, I'll grade easily, but take some time to think about these. Take some time to really look in your life and look at Jesus' life. Because this is something we're facing today. It's something we're battling. And it doesn't change our purpose. And I hope you notice that about Christ. Just because he was misunderstood, it didn't mean he quit. Just because the world didn't comprehend what he was about, it didn't mean he said, all right, I'm done. I'm going to bail out on my mission. I think that's where a lot of Christians are today. Because we're misunderstood, we think it's okay to quit. We think it's okay to just do nothing. Guys, that's not an option. But I think we do need to learn how to act in the right ways. And hopefully we can do that as we continue to look at these thoughts here in a couple weeks. This morning, as you look at your life, maybe you've struggled with this and you need prayers. Maybe you're going through it right now. We know that Jesus understands what we're going through. Maybe you've never put on Christ in baptism. It's where our walk begins, the greatest adventure of life, to just follow Jesus day by day. You need to be baptized into Christ, or if we can pray for you this morning, we invite you to come as we stand and sing together.
There's a fountain free just for you and me. Let us haste, oh, haste to its brink. It's a fount of love from the source above, and he bids us all freely drink. Will you come to the fountain free? Will you come? Tis for you and me, thirsty souls. Hear the welcome call. Tis a fountain open for all. There's a living stream with a crystal gleam from the throne of life now it flows. While the waters roll, let the weary soul hear the call that forth freely goes. Will you come to the fountain free? Will you come? Tis for you and me, thirsty soul. Hear the welcome call. is a fountain open for all. There's a rock that's cleft, and no soul is left that may not its pure water share. Tis for you and me, and its stream I seek. Let us hasten joyfully there. Will you come to the fountain creek? Will you come? Tis for you and me, thirsty souls. Hear the welcome call. Tis a fountain creek.